Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School at Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries daily worldwide over the internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Can They Do That? Right after this. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something is wrong, very wrong now with the Ten Commandments, because they've been banned from our public schools. They're banned from our public institutions. They're banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these 10 simple time-tested laws, we see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place. And they're teaching these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, our public institutions. You know, we've made them a part of our national psyche. And this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years. For instance, are you aware that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent? But your daughter can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent. That's why I contend that the solution to this kind of moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and advocated all 10 of the Ten Commandments, and they even put 22 principles of that law into our Constitution. And there's still at least one school left in America that's teaching this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits for their observance. You know, every law is a penalty. Now, you don't have to know what the penalty to the law is to suffer from its effects. So whether we call this the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, the Common Law, Natural Law, or Karma, or something else, you know, it works automatically. It's just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happened to be the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package first. That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about Can They Do That? It's a common question when you have a run-in with the police or a public official or some clerk in a store or in a public environment like the telephone company, the gas company, the garbage company, and so on. You know, well, can they do that? We get asked that quite often. But there's one institution that I have never been asked, can they do that? And that's concerning the fair trial. And that's because everybody knows that in America, whenever you go into the courtroom, you always get a fair trial. Well, everybody must believe that, because I'm not receiving any can they do that's from people asking, can the judge do that? Can prosecutors do that? Well, I haven't yet, because I guess we presume that these trials here in America are always fair. So I got to looking at the fair trial. Do you remember Saddam Hussein? He was tried and convicted and then hung over in Iraq. Wasn't that a fair trial? Let me ask you this. Was there ever any doubt in your mind as to the outcome? The Nuremberg trials. Remember back in 1946 and 7, you know, when they had the Nuremberg trials and they're trying all the Nazis over there? Did anybody have any doubts as to how the outcome of that trial was going to, what was going to be, or how the outcome was going to come out? Now, we call these fair trials. I've never heard anybody say, let's take these Nazis into a kangaroo court. Let's try Saddam Hussein in the local kangaroo court. Let's give him an unfair trial. Let's give him a biased trial. No, I've never heard that before. I always hear the word fair trial. Anytime we have a trial, it's a fair trial. We don't have stacked and rigged evidence and things like that now, do we? Well, listen to this. When you're driving down the road, you know, just minding your own business, doing your thing at 90 miles an hour, and Ranger Rick comes up behind you, turns on his lights, pulls you over, and you start talking to him. He asks you a few questions like, do you know how fast you were going? Well, yeah, I was going 90 miles an hour. He writes that down. So I'm going to give you a ticket. But to show you how fair Ranger Rick's going to be, he says, I'm only going to put 80 on the ticket. I had a cop do that a couple of times to me. He, the real nice guy, you know, he caught me going 90, but he said, I'm just going to write 80. You know, make it cheaper for you. So he was feeling good that day, I guess. And then what's the next thing that happens? Well, now you got to make a court appearance. Now, this ticket is issued by the state of Missouri. Do you notice that? It's the state of California, the state of Florida. So the party who's complaining about you driving 90 miles an hour down the highway, it isn't the policeman. It's not me or you or somebody else on the highway. Hell, it's not even the judge or the prosecutor. It's the state that's complaining. It's the state of California versus Joe Finkelstein. It's the people of the state of, you know, they're the ones that are making this complaint. Just read the title of it. No one says it's the people of or the state of California or whatever. All right, so this is a municipal corporation, the state of California, and they're making this complaint against you. They're saying that you were driving 90 miles an hour down the highway in violation of. So they say, well, now, California has a speed law. Speed is supposed to be 75, and here you are going 90, or at 65, and here you are going 80, or whatever. And so then they cite some numbers, and they say, well, speeding. Okay. Now, you appear in, where do you appear? I mean, you don't show up at JCPenney's now, do you? I mean, you aren't summoned to appear at the Outlaw or the Outback restaurant now, are you? You're summoned to appear in the 4th Judicial District Traffic Court, aren't you? Well, whose court is this? Isn't it the state of California's court? So you're summoned into the state of California's court by the state of California, who's making this complaint against you that you're in violation of some code, rule, regulation, custom, usage, or practice. Let me ask you this. Who made this law? Who made this custom, usage, or practice? Wasn't it the state of California? So the state of California makes a law. The state of California complains that you're in violation of their law, and they summoned you into their court, don't they? All right, so now we got the state of California, the state of California's law, and the state of California's court. Now, in our quest for a fair trial, who's presiding over this court? The guy's called a judge. Well, let me ask you this. Who's paying this judge a salary every Friday? Isn't it the state of California? Yes, sir, Rebob. Now, you got the state of California complaining about your behavior, and they claim that you're violating the state of California's law, and they haul you into the state of California's court, and they bring you up in front of the state of California's judge. Now, in this process, we have to have somebody come in here and prosecute you. He's called a prosecutor, prosecuting attorney, district attorney. Let me ask you this. Who's paying his salary every Friday? Isn't it the complainant, the state of California? All right, now we've got the state of California complaining about your behavior, so they're complaining that you're violating their law, that's the state of California's law, hauled you into the state of California's court in front of the state of California's judge and prosecute you by the state of California's prosecutor. Now, in our quest for a fair trial, we have to have some witnesses. So the policeman's going to come in, he's going to testify against you. The people of the state of California, not a one of them, is going to come in here and say a word against you. But the state of California, who's complaining about your behavior in the state of California's court concerning the state of California's law in front of the state of California's judge, being prosecuted by the state of California's prosecuting attorney, has to have a state of California highway patrolman who's getting paid every Friday by the state of California to testify against you. Now, during all of this process, the judge at some point is going to say, now look, Joe Finkelstein, you might not understand how this game is being played. So we want to show you how fair we want to be. We want to make sure you get a fair trial. So you should have a lawyer represent you here. And just in case you can't afford a lawyer, we will appoint the public defender. Now, who's going to pay this public defender to defend you? Well, the complaining party, the state of California. This corporation called the state of California is going to hire your attorney for you. Now, just in case you don't qualify or you don't want the state of California's attorney, you can hire your own private attorney. Now, if you went down the street and you just picked up the Yellow Pages and looked at lawyers and you went in and interviewed a lawyer and you hired him, he's licensed. And then who is it that licenses this lawyer? Isn't it the state of California? Okay, now let's review this again. We're looking for a fair trial. And the state of California, a corporation, is complaining about your behavior that you violated one of their policies. That's California Code 49202, speeding. And so they hauled you into the state of California's court. Whose rules are they going to play this game by? Well, it's the state of California's rules that they apply in the state of California's court. In the state of California's court, they have a judge. This judge is hired and bought and paid for by the state of California, as is the prosecutor, as is the witness against you, the policeman, and the lawyer who's going to represent you in here is either going to be bought and paid for by the state of California or licensed by the state of California. Let's back up here for a second. Let's try this on for size. Let's suppose that you come to visit me here at the Gordon Farm. And when you come here, as you're driving down my lane, my son Dirk races up behind you on his bicycle, flags you down and says, hey, you're in violation of the Gordon Farm speed law. Well, you're going 15 miles an hour down this lane, and we only allow 10 miles an hour. I'm going to write you a citation and summons you before the Gordon Court of Justice. And so you're maybe a little bewildered here, but I suggest to you that if you give me any static, I'll call the sheriff and have you arrested for trespassing. And you protest and say, but I have permission to come here. I was invited here. Kind of like you were driving down the freeway. But I have a license, and I was invited to drive down this freeway. Yeah, but you weren't invited to drive 15 miles an hour down this lane. You were invited to drive down the lane at 10 miles an hour. All right, so now my boy brings you in here to my office and I say, well, I'm Judge Gordon and I'm going to preside over these proceedings over here. You're in violation of the Gordon Code of Justice. So we're going to try you here in the Gordon Court. And we here at the Gordon Farm make the rules by which we're going to try you here in the Gordon Court of Justice. Now, I've got to have somebody who can prosecute you, so I'm going to bring my wife in, and she'll prosecute you. I pay her. I live with her. She helps me draft these laws, rules, and regulations. And then I got to have a witness against you, so I think I'll bring my daughter Cole in. I'll have her testify against you. Let's see, now we've got a judge, a court, we got rules, we got laws, rules, and regulations. You're in violation of them. We got a judge, we got a prosecutor, we got witnesses. Now, I say to you, look, maybe you don't understand how the Gordon Court of Justice works. So to show you how fair I'm going to be, I'm going to have my hired man come in here and represent you. He's a good milker. He's a nice guy. He works real hard. Would you call this a fair trial? Now, I've never been asked, can they do that when we talk about a fair trial? But I just thought I'd throw that one out for you and ask you the question, did you say fair trial? Huh? Did you say fair trial here? All right. Now let's take another look here at something that is a common practice that goes on. It's called the draft. Now, we haven't had a draft in this country for a long time. It's been a long time. It went clear back to the Vietnam War, you know, that we had this draft thing, and your number would come up, and God, people were really excited about that draft thing. So I thought, well, shucks, I ought to look up the draft. So I did. I went out and did a little legal research, and I looked up draft, and I looked up military conscription and involuntary servitude, 13th Amendment, slavery, bond servitude, and so on. And here's what I discovered. Here in the United States of America, between 1776 and last night at 5 o'clock, there has never been a draft in this country. Nobody has ever been compelled into the military against his will and over his objection. Not one time. Never has happened. I mean, that's almost like being a Holocaust denier. You know, you walk up and say, well, I don't believe that 6 million Jews were killed in the ovens in Germany. They call that a Holocaust denier. Now listen, I got something very similar to that. I walk in here and I say, wait a minute, I just checked this out. I went out and I researched this. There's never been a draft in this country. Not one single soldier during all of World War II, World War I, Korea, Vietnam, was ever pressed into military service against his will and over his objection. Not one. Nobody has ever been drafted into the Army. Now, my dad was drafted into the Army. That was what he told me. Because, see, when you go into the Army, well, you have to volunteer. See? So he would go down to the recruiter, and then he interviews you to see if you can qualify, and brings out a contract, and you sign up if you're underage, and your daddy has to sign for you, you know, along with you, give you permission. And so you join the Army. Now, there's another way you can get into the Army. That's where they send you a letter, and it says, greetings. You have been inducted into the United States Army, commonly called the draft. And then you go down, and you get interviewed, and one thing and another, and sign some papers, and raise your right hand, and swear an oath, and go off to make the world safe for democracy. And so I got to thinking about that and looking at that, and I came to a pretty startling conclusion. Everybody from 1776 to last night at 5 o'clock has volunteered. Nobody has ever been pressed into service against his will. All right, now with that out of the way, let's take a look at how this works. One time I had a student come in here, his name is Ziggy Crothers. And back during the Vietnam era, Ziggy's number came up. And Ziggy had been thinking about this Vietnam War for a long time. And then his number came up and he got a letter that said, greetings, you've been inducted into the United States Army. And we want you to appear at the Army Induction Center in Atlanta, Georgia, 2204 Jones Road, blah, blah, blah. You know, whatever the letter says. I've never seen one, but I've heard people tell me that. So Ziggy now had been thinking about this, and he came to a conclusion. He said, you know, I don't think I want to go into the Army, and I don't think I want to go over to Vietnam and fight in this war. Now, I talked to Ziggy a number of times. He wasn't a conscientious objector. He wasn't religious at all. He didn't have any particular objection to killing people. You know, it didn't really make any difference to him if he's killing Germans or Japs or slant-eyed gooks or whatever. You know, just kill anybody that gets in the way. He didn't have any moral compunctions about life and death and things like that. He wasn't religious, wasn't giving his heart to Jesus or nothing like that. So pretty hard for him to go in there, you know, like Muhammad Ali and say, I'm a Muslim and I'm opposed to war on religious grounds or something like that, because Ziggy told me none of that was applicable. Now, if you fail to make your appearance at the Army Induction Center, God only knows what might happen to you. It might call you a draft evader. Now, I looked this up, too. There was a number of cases where people have evaded the draft and been prosecuted, convicted, and jailed, and served their time, and then were released. Called draft evasion. Yep, that happens. I've seen that. Now, remember, I said there's never been a draft in this country, so how could you get convicted for draft evasion if you don't have a draft? See? I know somebody's sitting there right now, they're kind of fuming, and they're getting ready to write me an email and say, "You dummy, you dunce," and send me over in the corner and put the dunce cap on me. You know? So Ziggy now faced with this conundrum. You know, if I don't appear, they'll probably put a warrant out for my arrest. So here's a letter that says you have to appear at the Army Induction Center at 2204 Jones Road, Atlanta, Georgia. Now Ziggy lives up in Chattanooga, Tennessee. So he says, "Okay, I'm prepared to go to prison for 4 years. I'm prepared to go to Leavenworth. I'm ready. I would rather go to prison than I would to go into the Army." Now you got a couple of choices here. You know, you could jump on a plane and run up to Canada. A lot of guys did that. They evaded the draft. They're called draft evaders, also known as chicken things, you know. Well, Ziggy said, "Well, I guess I got to bite the bullet and make my appearance." And so he got on the bus and he went down to Atlanta. He showed up at 1:30 in the afternoon at the appointed time, or 1 o'clock, 1 or 1:30. And he went in and they showed him into a big room, and he went into this big room, and there was a bunch of other young fellows in there. You know, he got there a little bit early. And these other guys that were in the room, he counted them all, and there was a total of 23 other people in the room, 23 other potential inductees being inducted into the United States Army. And so he was number 24. Now, there was a couple, three soldiers in there. He said that they had a lot of gold braid on them. So they had medals and badges and pins and decorations and really snappy, sharp, well-pressed uniforms. And so pretty soon at the appointed time, one of the guys that had all the gold braid on him, you know, the guy that had the most gold braid, he stepped up and he said, "All right, gentlemen, now I want you to line up in two rows, two ranks," he called them, "two ranks of 12 each. And so the other two or three guys that were in the room, also Army guys, had to show these 24 potential inductees how to line up in two rows of 12 each. So Ziggy said that he strategically placed himself in the second row on the far left end, on his left side, left end. And the guy with all the gold braid, who obviously was the leader of this gang, he said, "All right, gentlemen, I want everybody to take one step forward and raise your right hand." And so 23 of these guys took one step forward, and they all raised their right hands, except for Ziggy. And he took one step back and one step to the left, which made him two steps behind everybody else and one step to the left of everybody else. And he said, wait a minute. "If I do this, will I be waiving any of my civil or constitutional rights?" Now, naturally, that's unusual. Not everybody asks legal questions like that when they're getting ready to take their oath to join the Army. And so, naturally, everybody had their eyeballs fixed on Ziggy. What's wrong with this guy? Nobody else is in here talking. Nobody else in here is asking about their civil or constitutional rights. And by the way, what do rights have to do with this ceremony? We're about to take an oath here, see? So the leader, that is the guy with all the gold braid on, instructed one of the other Army guys to escort this gentleman out, and we'll talk to you later. So Ziggy was escorted out by one of the other Army guys into another room where he sat for quite a while. He said 15, 20 minutes. And then they brought him back into the big room. And Ziggy said when he got back into the big room, the other 23 guys were gone. He said, "I don't know what happened to the other 23 guys. They just disappeared. I never saw them again, forever and ever. I never saw those 23 men from that day to this." But he said the other four guys, the leader, the one with all the gold braid, started asking him questions like, "What's wrong with you, son? Why are you disrupting the proceedings?" He immediately took the guardian ward relationship position, took the position of the guardian, starts asking questions of his charge. "Why are you doing this? Who put you up to this? Where did you learn this?" Now, Ziggy's just a young fellow. I think he said he's about 20 years old at that time, 20, maybe 21. He just, you know, young, never studied the law, doesn't really know a whole lot. But he just made up his mind that he's going to go to Leavenworth. He had it in his mind, that's what's going to happen to me. And so the guy with the gold braid said, "I'm going to give you an opportunity to recant. I'm not going to be hard on you, son. You've made a mistake here." He explained to him the law and how the law requires him to serve his country. "It's time for you to step up to the plate, son, and serve your country like everybody else, like I'm doing, and like these good soldiers are doing, and like those 23 other compatriots of yours are going to do. Like men, real men, not spineless yellow dog cowards who shirk their duty, but real Americans. Stand up and fight and die and give their lives for your liberties and the freedoms that you enjoy today." So when he got all through, He said, "Now, Mr. Crothers, I want you to stand up, raise your right hand, take a step forward, and repeat after me." And Ziggy asked him again. He said, "Now, if I do this, will I be waiving any of my civil or constitutional rights?" And he said, they just got livid. He said, "That guy just got so mean, so nasty. He just turned red. He just had an apoplectic fit. And he threatened him. And we're going to throw you into Leavenworth. Do you understand the penalty that's coming down on you? Do you know what's going to happen to you?" And then one of the other guys piped up and he said, "Well, now, you know, this isn't as bad as you think it's going to be. Well, when I joined the Army, I went to Germany and I went to the Oktoberfest, you know, in Munich, and had all these good times and all these good girlfriends and all this, you know. And on top of that, you know, hell, you might join the Army here, and when it's all said and done, you'll be shipped off to Korea." I've had guys tell me that Korea was worse than Vietnam, but, or you might be shipped off to Germany. You know, we got troops all over the world. You never know where you're going to go, where your duty station's going to be. And so they played what we called the Mutt and Jeff routine. There was a good guy, bad guy came in there. One guy's threatening to throw him into jail, the next guy's telling him what a wonderful experience he's going to have, what a great adventure the Army has, and one thing and another. They worked on him, he said, until 4:45. Sometimes they'd leave the room and let him sit there and sulk for half an hour, and then they come back in and threaten him and work on him and rob him. Same four guys, kept working on him, working on him, working on him. I remember this thing started off at 1:30, 4:45, they came back, they gave him a one-way bus ticket. Got that? They gave him a one-way bus ticket back to Chattanooga. And a promise that you will be arrested, you will be prosecuted, and you will go to prison for 4 years. Absolute guarantee, son, there's no way around it. Now, you've made your mistake, we gave you a chance, you refused the chance that we offered you, and now it's too late. Prison is in your future. So Ziggy left, got on the bus, went back to Chattanooga, and at the time I talked to him, at the time I made this interview, that had been about 10 years prior to that. By now he's about 30. And unless they've arrested him and jailed him or prosecuted him in the last 20 or 25 years, why, now what happened here? Huh? What do you think happened? Well, you mull that one over, boys and girls, while I give you your mid-course reminder here, and when I come back, I'll tell you. Meanwhile, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States or heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. So be sure to order yours by calling and asking for it. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing and recommending will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and editorial review, they may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website is georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about can they do that? Talking about the draft right now. Yes, you can be drafted into the Army by way of a notice. So the draft is your notice to appear. It's kind of like a jury summons. Do you have to serve on a jury? Think about that. What if they call you into court and they want you to serve on a jury? Well, one thing is for certain. When you receive a summons, you must appear. Nobody gets drafted into the Army. Nobody gets held in contempt of court for not serving on the jury or not serving in the Army. The prosecution comes, the punishment comes from your refusal to appear. And you're appearing for an examination. And the examination, when you're called in for jury duty, is to see if you're competent to serve on the jury. And so you walk in and you say, "Well, I don't want to serve on this jury." And the judge says, well, that's no excuse. And so they start asking you a few questions. It's called jury voir dire. And they say, do you know the defendant? And you look at him and you'll get it. No, I don't think I do. Now, they'll ask you, have you read anything about this case in the paper? No, nope, I don't think I have. Did you hear anything about this case on the news or on the television? No, I don't think I have. All right, now, are there any reasons why you can't serve on this jury? Yep. Can you tell us why it is that you don't think that you should serve on this jury? And now if you say something like, well, because I'm busy and I don't want to, the judge will say, nope, that's not the right answer. But if you say to the judge, well, the guy looks like he's just guilty as hell to me, and I think if I was put on the jury, which I just can't wait to serve, I'll convict that sucker right away. Or I just don't think that nice young man over there could have done a crime like that. So I'm going to find him not guilty because I... And do you know how long you're going to be on that jury? You're not going to get on that jury. No way in hell. Now, it's true that when you receive a jury summons, you must appear at the courthouse, but it is not true that you have ever been forced to serve on a jury. In fact, you can't get on a jury unless you lie, connive, and work real hard to deceive the court and both attorneys into believing that you're totally unbiased and that you'll make a good, stupid juror, easily manipulated by counsel in the court. You go in there and show them that you know something about jury process or the legal process, and you ain't going to serve. That's final. Now, same thing's true with the Army. The thing that makes you a soldier in the Army is the oath. You must take a step forward, and you must raise your right hand, and you must take this oath, which you were told not to do in the Bible. It is against the law for you to take this oath. Remember James 5:12 and Matthew 5:33? God told you, don't do that. Of course, we're all smarter than God, and so then we go in, take a step forward. That's your volunteering, boys and girls. You just volunteered. I know my dad said, well, I was drafted into the Army. I didn't volunteer. Oh, no. No, my dad volunteered to join the Army. He appeared under threat, duress, and coercion. But when he got there to the Army Induction Center, they asked him a question. And he stepped forward, raised his right hand, and said, I do. And that's what made him a soldier. He volunteered. Nobody has ever been forced to serve in the military against his will and over his objection. In every single case, they said, I do. All right, so much for Ziggy Crothers. So much for the draft. Now, once in a while, I get a card or a letter or a telephone call, and some guy will be talking about child support payments. You know, they get really excited about child support payments. Let me say this. Nobody here in the United States has ever been forced to make child support payments. Did you hear that? I've been around here for a long time, and I've heard stories and stories and stories about people being locked up in jail for non-support and being hassled and harassed and their salaries garnished and one thing and another. I just kind of look at these people, and they say, my old lady, my ex-wife, and all these ex-wives are just really wicked, evil shrews. I mean, you talk about Cinderella and the wicked stepmother. All these women are wicked, every one of them. I've never heard a good word about any of these women that are receiving child support or alimony. All of you women are wicked, like the wicked stepmother here. But I heard this story over and over again, so I went out and researched this. I was looking for the cases where people, unwilling husbands, have been divorced by their wives and had these wicked, evil courts put alimony and child support on them and then make them pay these payments against their will and over their objection. I looked and found one. Not one. So let me back up and tell you about the little Georgie Gordon story. I was married to a lady one time. Nice lady. God love her. She's a wonderful wife. She wasn't cheating on me or nothing else, but things got to the point where she and I didn't see eye to eye on a number of things, and so I suggested, well, maybe what we need is a friendly divorce. Now, that's a fiction. You know, I didn't have anything against her, and so I said, you know, why don't we just split the sheet and be friends about it, and you go your way and I'll go mine. We'll divide things up, and you know. And I thought we had a pretty good settlement there, but then she went out and started talking to her mother and brother, and then she went and got a lawyer, and well, let me tell you, as soon as the lawyer comes into this game, things aren't friendly anymore. And so let me just tell you that things went downhill from there. And so one day we appeared in court, and the judge said, well, Judge Carey, God love him, well, Judge Carey up there in Boise, 4th Judicial District, he said, well, Gordon, I'm going to grant this divorce. And so when you get this divorce, they take witnesses, evidence, and testimony, and they come up with a property settlement, and how many children do you have, and alimony, and child support, and separate maintenance, and who gets the house, and who gets this and that, who gets the bills, and all that. And so we got down to it. We kept, the last act is called the final decree. Now, up until now, you have a contract, a three-party limited general partnership between the boy, the girl, and the state. And, you know, the boy and the girl can't get a divorce. They have to go to partner number three to get a divorce. You got to go to the state. You know, when you have a state marriage license, you got to go. Now, if you had a patriarchal marriage, you'd go to Deuteronomy 24 verses 1 through 4, write up a bill of divorce and put it in your wife's hand. Or she could write up a bill of divorce and put it in her husband's hand. The divorce is handled between the parties, but not in a civil marriage. Can't do that. And I had a civil marriage. I was smarter than God. I didn't need one of these crazy patriarchal marriages. That's nonsense. I wanted to have a real marriage, you know, one with the state of California involved. And I did. And so me, the girl, and the state of California entered into a business arrangement. Out of this business arrangement, some children were born. And that's the issue that comes out of marriage. That's the increase. That's the property. That's the profit that comes out of it. Children. And we had three children in California. We had two children up in Idaho. Now, on this fateful day, back in 1984, when the court issued its divorce, and they passed out this piece of paper called the final decree, and handed it to my wife and said, sign here. And so she signed it, and then they brought it over to me, and they said, now, Mr. Gordon, you sign right below Mrs. Gordon. And I said to the judge, would it be all right if I read this final decree before I sign it? Most people do not read things before they sign them. So I read it, and I was amazed that this marriage contract, which is here in the divorce court being terminated, is now being replaced by a divorce contract, same three parties. What's going to happen here is we got a marriage contract between the boy, the girl, and the state. Now we're going to trade that in for a divorce contract between the boy, the girl, and the state. And I thought, you know, I wasn't happy with this marriage contract. What makes me think I'm going to be any happier with this divorce contract? So I kind of balked, and I said, no, Judge, I don't think I want to sign this. And he said, you have to sign it. See, here comes the can they do that gang. The judge said, you have to sign it. So now we got to ask ourselves, well, what are you going to do to me if I don't sign? And let's just assume that I'm a real hard nutcase here and I don't sign. I guess he could throw me in jail for contempt, couldn't he? I don't know if you boys and girls are aware of this, but there's a clause in our federal constitution that prohibits government from impairing the obligation of contract. It's Article 1, Section 10. Article 1, Section 10 has more than just no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin, a tender payment of debt. It's also got a clause in it that says government is prohibited from impairing the obligation of contract. And if you can't impair the obligation of my contract, you can't compel me to contract. And by God, I don't want to contract with you. I don't want to make a deal with you. I don't like you. And I don't want to do business with you. I've been doing business with you for a long time. And let me tell you, Mr. Idaho, I am totally dissatisfied with our business arrangement. Well, that was my position. Now, my wife's position was she was very happy with the business arrangement that she had with the state of Idaho. She signed the final decree in a heartbeat. I was the guy that was the party pooper raining on everybody's parade. So I said to the judge, I think I'll appeal this decision, which I have a right to do. And so I don't think anybody had ever done that to this judge in his entire career. You could just sit out there now. All you judges out there, how many guys have you ever had come into your court and say, I ain't signing the final decree? Have you ever had one do that? Think about that. All you lawyers out there, have you ever been in a divorce case where one of the parties said, no, I will not sign the final decree? I like that. So the judge said, well, I'm going to impose child support upon you, Mr. Gordon, blah, blah, blah. And so he did. He said, you got to pay X number of dollars here, child support every month. And I think he asked me if I understood, and I said, I'm hearing you. I hear you. I hear you, sir. I never agreed to it, but I heard what he told me. So we left, and some time went by, and I didn't make the payments. And when I didn't make the payments, then they grew up, and pretty soon there was a bill. It was a $2,500 bill. So one day, I was down here in Isabella, Missouri, just doing my business, just, you know, doing my thing. And one day, Jimmy Shaw showed up. Jimmy Shaw was our old sheriff here back in the 80s, and he served me with a summons and said, well, you got to come into court, and you got to answer this complaint you got against you here, you know. And so this complaint said that I hadn't paid my child support, and that I was in arrears $2,500, and under ERISA, Interstate Compact, you know, that the state of Missouri was here to collect the money and send it off to Idaho, and if I was found owed this money and didn't pay it, they're going to put me in jail. And so this is getting pretty serious. Now you got a summons. Now when you get this summons, you know, did we find out? When you get a summons, now you've got to show up. Now the judge, this is Charlie Brown, our local judge, you know, Charlie Brown says you got to show up in court and answer this complaint. So it was on November the 4th, about 1985, as I recall. And so I showed up in court, just like that subpoena told me. It's like that summons said, hey, you better show up here at your draft. You better show up for jury duty. You better show up for this hearing. So I did. I appeared. And so John Jacobs was a prosecutor back in those days. And Jacobs, he says, this is the date and time certain, judge, and blah, 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 and got the proceedings started. And the judge said, now, Mr. Gordon, this is a hearing to determine whether or not you owe some child support. I said, do you understand that? I said, yes, sir. Yes, sir, I understand it. I said, okay. He said, now, and he named off these children. He said, now, here's a boy here named Ted Gordon and George Gordon and Robert Gordon and Kathleen Gordon and Elaine Gordon. And he said, now, are these your children? Got that? He asked me, he named five children, and he named them, and he said, he asked me this question, very important question. He said, are these your children? Okay. And I answered the question, and I said, no, sir, they are not my children. And he was shocked. And John Jacobs over here, he gasped like Judy Hartson, who's about to run into Mr. Witt and tell Mr. Witt all of the indiscretions that little Georgie's done. I tell you, I was trained. I was trained in Sandbox by Ronnie Mitchell. And I was trained in gasps of disbelief by Judy Hartson back about fourth grade. I was little Judy Hartson. Gasps of unbelief. And so the judge couldn't believe his earballs either. And so he said to me, he said, were you married to this woman named Patricia? And I said, yes, sir. And he said, did you have any children with that woman? And I said, yes, sir. He said, how many did you have? I said, five. And he said, well, was one of them named Ted? Yes. Kathleen? Yes. Elaine? Yes. Robert? Yes. George? Yes. Well, then why are you denying that these are your children? And I said, because I gave them away. And the judge, I don't think Charlie had ever heard that line before. And he said, you gave your children away? He gasped like Judy Hartson. And he you gave your children away? I said, yes, yes, I did. And he said, who did you give them to? And I said, well, the first three I gave to the state of California. And the second two I gave to the state of Idaho. And he couldn't believe it. He said, how did you do that? And I said, with their birth certificates. I put them up for adoption. I passed my seed through the fire to Moloch. And they accepted them. And that's why they're not my children. Now, John Jacobs had been to, he was a Rhodes Scholar. I know the Rhodes Scholar should not be prosecuting attorneys in Ozark County, Missouri, but this guy was. He might have been a real dumb Rhodes Scholar. I don't know. I don't know why a Rhodes Scholar is in Ozark County. I wouldn't expect to see a Rhodes Scholar drive through Ozark County, much less become the prosecuting attorney here, but I got to tell you, that's the rumor around town, is that John Jacobs, the prosecuting attorney, was a Rhodes Scholar. Now, I think he kind of picked up on it right away, and he said, I want to move for dismissal. Excuse me, I want to move for continuance, not dismissal. That was my move. See? And so I objected to the continuance, and I said, this is the date and time certain set for this hearing, and I have subpoenaed two witnesses. I'm prepared to prove that these aren't my children and to dispose of this case today. Judge, I have subpoenaed Evel J. Younger, the Attorney General of California, to testify for the defendant today. Now, in a custody case, you're not the defendant, you're called the respondent. So I said, for the respondent, and I subpoenaed in Jim Jones of the Attorney General of Idaho to testify as to whose children these are. And so Jacobs, who was the prosecutor, said, well, we moved to quash the subpoenas, and they've been quashed, and they're not here today. And I said, what? What? You've quashed my subpoenas? Why, I'm entitled to witnesses for my defense. Why have you taken my witnesses for my defense away? And Charlie Brown said, your motion for continuance is granted. And I said, but I object. You know, as they got up and walked out, but I object. You see what just happened here? Boys and girls, they ask you the question, are these your children? And all of you fathers stand up. Yep, they're my children. Yep, they're my children. And then the judge says, well, then why in the hell don't you support them? The truth of the matter is, and I just had a guy call me yesterday. He said, I'm in this case and the state's taking my children. Honest to God, you people out there believe these children belong to you. They don't. Your children don't belong to you. They all have birth certificates. You people have passed your seed through the fire to Moloch. You have given your children away to the state, to a foreign and alien God, in violation of the law of God that said, you shall not pass your seed through the fire to Moloch. Well, you know, you religious people out there are smarter than God, so you violated that statute in Leviticus 20, verses 1 through 5. Go look it up. It's Leviticus 20, verses 1 through 5. Here's the creator of the universe says, don't do that! And all you people out there, you know, you're real smart people. You've got letters after your name, been to college, you know. Then your old lady divorces you, and you trade your marriage contract in for a divorce contract, and the judge says, hey, are these your children? You say, yep, they're mine. And then the judge says, well, why in hell ain't you feeding them? Why aren't you taking care of them? Huh? Then you're sitting there saying, but. And the judge says, throw that fool in jail for 30 days. Let's wake him up. And then you people call me, and you say, can they do that? Yes, sirree, Bob. They can do that, and they do that because you volunteered, just like joining the Army. You volunteered. No, you got married. You volunteered. No, nobody made you go down and get a marriage license, no. You had to get up early in the morning, go down to the courthouse, fill out forms, pay money, Boys and girls, you don't get hooked up with the state accidentally. You've got to get up early to enslave yourself to the state. You've got to take positive action. It isn't something that just kind of snuck up on you now. You know, if you people are just stay in bed, fold your hands, sit down, shut up, and don't do nothing, you couldn't get into trouble that way. To get into trouble, you got to get up, go sign papers, do things that you were told not to do in order to get into trouble. It's kind of like getting sick. You know, I mean, you can't get sick if you follow the 19 health laws of the Bible. To get sick, you've got to break the law. To get sick, you've got to go out and do something. You got to go out and do something you were told not to do. Now, can you follow that? All right, now in the Ziggy Crothers story, the people, the other 23 guys, when they stood up, raised their right hand, and swore the oath of allegiance, that's what converted them from civilians to soldiers. And now they're subject to the Uniform Code of Military Justice, and they've divorced themselves from their constitution. You people in the military services have no constitutional rights, period. End of report. And if you'll look on the list of 16 statuses of persons, a soldier is one status above a convict. I mean, you soldiers are so low down on your constitutional status list, the only thing lower than you is a convict. All right, so now if you understand what your position is. Now, when you started out, boys and girls, you were an individual at the top of the list. And somewhere along the line, you've signed some contracts like Social Security and marriage licenses and driver's licenses and business licenses and so on. And you have impaired your liberty to some degree, and now you find yourself subject to and asking the question, can they do that? And when you ask the question, can they do that, if they're doing it to you, they probably have a contract that you signed in which you agreed, yes, they can do that. Hey, you're listening to The Law Hour and the Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.